Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters: your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
In 2013, two brutal murders left the city of Davis, California, paralyzed in fear.
The victims were an elderly couple. It was up close and personal.
I'm 48 Hours correspondent Erin Moriarty. I thought I had seen it all until I encountered the mastermind behind those murders.
I think the word is psychotic.
This is 15 Inside the Daniel Marsh Murders. Follow and listen to 15 Inside the Daniel Marsh Murders on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
To know more about the purple that Matthew Collar does, you'd have to be inside the huddle with
Carson Wentz.
The Inside Scoop from the Purple Insider. Here's Matthew Collar.
Ready or not, here I come.
It is the bye week, but there's no bye week for Matthew Collar, the Purple Insider. He's joining us now on the Lake Show, as he does each and every Thursday at 7:05, courtesy of the John Shishakoa Banker Hotline. How does Matthew Collar, how does he deal with the bye week?
It hasn't really changed a whole lot for me. I've still been podcasting, still been writing. I mean, Kevin O'Connell did a press conference on Monday and laid out some really interesting things that he wants to see J.J. McCarthy do in practice over, I guess he's going to be doing some practice this week and then next week. So I wrote about that. And, it's also a good time to kind of step back and kind of take a look at the league and where the Vikings stand, where they need to go. So, I haven't changed a thing, really, Henry. It's only going to be on game day where I'll just get to sit and watch football like the rest of the world.
All right, so let's go back to last Sunday. What did you make of their game against Cleveland? Like, what type of a grade, what was your evaluation for the way that the Vikings played on Sunday in that victory?
Yeah, that was one where you need to come home with a W, and we'll figure out the rest later. That is not a style points type of victory, because as bad as Cleveland has been over the last 2 years, the guys who play on their defense are pretty darn good. And to face that defensive line with, at the end of the game, four backup offensive linemen and come home with a win is impressive, and I don't care how it happened. Now, they can't play like they did against Cleveland offensively for the rest of the season and think that they're going to be one of the best teams in the NFL. But to sort of survive in advance at 3-2, it keeps the season alive and gives them a chance to come back home and still chase a playoff spot and still be in the NFC North race and still have a chance when they get healthy to achieve the things that they set out to achieve when they started this year. I think if they had lost to Cleveland, then that all would have mostly been out the window. I mean, it would just, no matter what happens with the schedule, whether it's hard or easy, if you come home at 2-3 with the Lions and Packers in your division and a lot of good teams in the NFC, it would have been really, really tough. So, I was impressed mostly with Kevin O'Connell's game plan, getting the ball out of Carson Wentz's hands. I believe he was the fastest in the league from snap to release of the football. Coming home with that clutch drive that he had, Jordan Addison, despite being suspended for a quarter, going up and getting it, and we started to see a little flash of what it looks like to have Jefferson and Addison. So, overall, it was not perfect at all, but I also thought they found some things for their offense that will work going forward, regardless of whether it's J.J. McCarthy or Carson Wentz under center.
All right, so let's get this out of the way right now with regards to Jordan Addison. I'm glad you brought him up. I know he had the game-winning touchdown. I was like everybody else because I was actually out of town traveling last week over the weekend, and I was watching the game from my hotel room, and I noticed, like everybody else, like he wasn't, there, the opening parts of the game, and I'm like, what the heck is going on? And then, we hear about he was sat down because he missed the walkthrough and all that stuff. I'm just going to tell you, man, I don't want to say that I'm over Jordan Addison because I know he's an important person to this offense, but I'm sick of the knucklehead behavior. Like, dude, get your act together. Off the field, you have been kind of a knucklehead with the driving stuff, and now you're missing walkthroughs, and we have to punish you in that way. Like, at this particular time, a guy that talented, and I say that talented, I don't mean on the level of, like, Justin Jefferson or, like, the best receivers in the game, but somebody that's got talent, I don't look at him and I feel like he is in – like, he's endearing to me to the point of, I'm going to put up with this stuff, and I'm going to pay him big money. I don't know. Where are you at with Jordan Addison? Because, man, I'm kind of sick of him already.
Yeah, after incident number two last summer, the DUI, I remember saying that if they decided to move on from him because of the off-field stuff, that I would support that because you're not Justin Jefferson. And as good as he is, and I think he's a phenomenal player, he's not Justin Jefferson. He's not the franchise player. And, you know, I think, you know, when you have the things that he's done off the field already, anything, even if it's a one-quarter suspension, I mean, you've already missed three games due to off-field stuff, so now it's three games in one quarter. How much more would you like to hurt your team, Jordan Addison? I mean, that's the concern there, is that this stuff will not stop happening, and you're going to get more suspensions or more problems or, you know, more phone calls in the middle of the night for Kevin O'Connell in dealing with his wide receiver. And I thought, you know, there, of course, you know, there's a lot of fans who like to, you know, kind of say, oh, it's no big deal, it was just this, it was just that. Well, if you look at the way that Justin Jefferson talked about it after the game, I would try telling Justin that, because he was very upset, it seemed, at how Jordan Addison had acted. And, you know, Jefferson kind of put it on himself, oh, I have to mentor him better. Well, that's not your job. Your job, Justin Jefferson, is to catch touchdowns. He's a grown-up now. He's making millions of dollars. It's time for him to deal with this stuff himself. And you're right that there is a decision looming, a fifth-year option, a potential contract extension. His performance on the field and even the type of teammate he's been inside the locker room has all been a guy you pay, a guy that you want next to Justin Jefferson for the next 5-7 years. But if you can't trust him, whether it's during the summer, during the spring when you're not at the facility, or whether it's overseas for 10 days to not get himself in trouble, then that isn't somebody you can really go forward with. So I think that this is a big rest of the season and off season for Jordan Addison to keep it together, because this was definitely a red flag. I wouldn't say it was his third strike. More of a foul ball. But
I don't trust
still,
him. I don't trust him.
Right. I agree. No, I agree. I mean, and trust is earned, right? And he absolutely has not done that.
Yep. We're talking to Matthew Kyle, the Purple Insider, here on the Lake Show News Talk 830 WCCO. All right, let's get right into it, man. If J.J. McCarthy is completely healthy and Carson Wentz is completely healthy, who do you start next?
Well, I really love the way that Kevin O'Connell laid it out on Monday. I asked him, what does he want to see from J.J. McCarthy when he returns to practice? And he said that he wants to see fundamentals from him. He wants to see the footwork, the timing in practice that he saw in the offseason and in training camp that seemed to get lost when he actually got onto the field. And not completely, and it's not every single play was bad, but, you know, we saw the Atlanta game. And yes, I know there were some backups in. There were some backups in for Carson Wentz as well when he played Cleveland. That's the league, right? You don't always get your entire lineup, and you have to give your team a chance. And McCarthy did not do that the last time he was in there. And it was clear, I thought, from what O'Connell said, that it was his decision-making, his timing, and the fact that he wasn't seeing the reads the way he needed to, and he was one of the slowest at getting rid of the football in that game. And I think that probably scared the head coach a lot. Like, wait a minute, if he can't do the easy stuff that we practiced all summer, then we're not going to win many games with him. So he has to show that to O'Connell in practice. And I think whatever the head coach decides here is the right way to go. If he doesn't see it from McCarthy in practice, then I can't say, oh, sorry, Kevin, you got to play him anyway because I want to see him. But if he does, then you got to get him back in there, and you're going to have to deal with some of the ups and downs that go with a young quarterback.
Yeah, it's time to play him, man. I said this a few days ago, and I stand by this. We got to see what we have, man. I don't want to keep playing this game, and I know that Carson Wentz right now, the way that he's getting the ball out quick and decision making and his experience is better suited for them to maybe collect a few more victories, but I'm not going to keep kicking the can. Like, let's see what JJ has. I'm sick of watching highlights of Bo Nix making plays, Drake May winning games, Jaden Daniels. I'm already frustrated already, Matthew, and I hate feeling this way.
Well, because we've seen him play two games and he's been on the team for a year and a half now. I mean,
and he's looked dreadful.
Right, and then in the two games, there's one quarter of actual good football. But, you know, your guy Josh Wheeler there might tell you that patience with a quarterback can pay off sometimes, because his favorite player, Baker Mayfield, now looks like an MVP after, you know, Cleveland wasn't very patient with him. And I think that's what, you know, O'Connell might argue if he doesn't want to put him back in there is, look, the kid is, 22 years old, and he has not had a lot of behind-the-scenes work. One, you know, two full training camps and two preseason games and two regular season games isn't a whole lot for somebody that, you know, didn't throw the ball a lot in college. And so I guess for me, there's nobody in the world that knows better about how to handle this than O'Connell. So as much as I want to see him and you want to see him, and we are getting antsy and impatient, impatience is also one of the reasons that some of these other quarterbacks around the league who were drafted in the first round are now.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
In 2013, two brutal murders left the city of Davis, California, paralyzed in fear.
The victims were an elderly couple. It was up close and personal.
I'm 48 Hours correspondent Erin Moriarty. I thought I had seen it all until I encountered the mastermind behind those murders.
I think the word is psychotic.
This is 15 Inside the Daniel Marsh Murders. Follow and listen to 15 Inside the Daniel Marsh Murders on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Stars for other teams.
But aren't they stars because they were thrown in the fire, though, too?
Well, I mean, not Sam Darnold. I mean, you know, Sam Darnold was 20 years old and tossed in to play with the New York Jets too soon, and that created bad habits, and he got injured and behind, and Anthony Richardson was played too soon.
No, that's the point.
There's a lot of examples of that.
No, that's the point I'm asking about, though. Baker Mayfield and these guys were thrown in the fire early, and yeah, they bumped their heads, but I think that part of the process of getting experience was that they bumped their heads. I'm not saying be impatient with JJ, but we're not going to wait around 3-4 years for JJ and then have to make decisions, and the sample size shows he's not been good.
Yeah, no, I understand not 3-4 years, but what about maybe 3-4 weeks, like behind the scenes to get him more ready in practice? I mean, I agree with you. My point is just the NFL is very, very hard.
Agreed.
And, you know, when you take somebody like Baker Mayfield who needed more development and you toss him into the fire, that's where you get guys in over their head at times or injured or whatever else. Maybe, I mean, Darnold's an even better example of that, as somebody who was just in over their head at the beginning of their career. And because of all the hype and because they had drafted him and they felt like they had to play him rather than developing him in practice. And, you know, it's very possible that O'Connell, who has made it very clear that he is careful when it comes to, you know, not messing up quarterbacks, that he wants to do everything he can for the guy to succeed, that patience might go along with that. And I don't think he's going to care if we want to see him or not.
Yeah.
I mean, I do think, though, that if you play Carson Wentz, there's a cap on this season where you're probably an 8 or 9 win team. And I don't see how you can do much more than that if you play Wentz. But my point is, as much as I think, hey, I agree, I actually agree with you. Like, he needs to play, that, and I don't know any other option. But if KOC disagrees, who am I to say, sorry, Kevin, I don't know, man. That's where it's a difficult spot for everybody, because everyone wants to see J.J. McCarthy play.
Yeah. You know, one of the things, I want to get your thoughts on the bye week, because I know that there are a lot of times where I know that me, typically, I don't like for the teams that I root for, specifically the Minnesota Vikings, to have bye weeks pretty early in the season. And what I mean by pretty early is like within the first like 5 or 6 weeks. But I do think that this year the bye week came at the perfect time.
100% agree. I mean, this is a team that dealt with, I don't know if it's a historic amount of injuries, but it sure feels like it. I mean, I think they've had 11 or 12 different combinations of an offensive line through the first 5 weeks of a season. That's insane. I mean, you know, we're talking about undrafted left guard starting. We're talking about a guy who'd never played center before having to be thrown in there, two backup tackles. I mean, it's just been such a mess with the injuries, and that's not even to mention Blake Cashman and Andrew Van Ginkle and the fact that Harrison Smith has not played a full game yet so far this season. I mean, it's just it's been so difficult for this team when it comes to the injuries that this bye week is a great opportunity for them to get fully healthy, and they're really going to need it because they play Philadelphia and the Chargers and Detroit. It's not an easy run after this, but I think that if you look at the guys that they're getting back from injury, we're talking about first-round picks. We're talking about Pro Bowl-caliber players. I mean, this isn't just, hey, you know, a starter here or there. We're talking about significant players on this team. I don't think that we've seen anywhere close to the full version of the 2025 Minnesota Vikings, and coming out of the break should give us the closest opportunity to see that.
Yeah. Hey, real quickly, last thing, because I know that we don't have a game to talk about here coming up this weekend. In the NFC, who is the best team?
I still would go, well, you know, Philadelphia. I don't want to overreact to Philadelphia because people did that last year. Oh, look, you know, Jalen Hurts had a few weeks where it was a down on the offensive side, and then, you know, he and A.J. Brown got it together and they won the Super Bowl. So
Last year. Yeah.
Yep. Yep, exactly. But, you know, Detroit has certainly made their case as well. And they're a little banged up on the secondary. But, man, like Jared Goff, just every single year, nobody ever writes Jared Goff for an MVP favorite. And then he puts up huge offensive numbers and they dominate and they've got great weapons. So I think if you were talking about one team you didn't want to play right now, it's probably the Detroit Lions.
Yeah, I would agree. I think Detroit's the best team. I think they're right there together. I'm not going to overreact to Philly losing too, but Philly has shown that they've got to get their act together. And I think that people just thought that Saquon Barkley was just going to have that type of season again, and that's like a once-in-a-lifetime type of season that he had last year.
Oh, totally agree. Yeah, every single player who's run for 2,000 yards the next season has had regression. But I think that they will figure that out, some of the struggles offensively. And, you know, there's the thing about the NFC, though, Henry, is that there's that tier of two teams that I think are better than everybody, and maybe I'd toss the Rams in that conversation as well. And then there's about 6-7 other teams that can all make a case that they should be in the playoffs, whether it's, you know, the Packers or even Atlanta. I mean, there's just a lot of other teams, Seattle, vying for position, and I think we haven't come anywhere close to figuring out exactly how to sort that out yet.
Yep. Hey, great stuff as always, man. I'm off next Thursday, but whoever is in this spot, unless it's you, we'll be talking Vikings football with you.
That sounds good, Henry. Well, we'll talk sometime then.
All right, we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks. That's Matthew Collar, the Purple Insider, joining us here on The Lake Show. Coming up next, we've got Bite of the Night. That's next year on The Good.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
In 2013, two brutal murders left the city of Davis, California, paralyzed in fear.
The victims were an elderly couple. It was up close and personal.
I'm 48 Hours correspondent Erin Moriarty. I thought I had seen it all until I encountered the mastermind behind those murders.
I think the word is psychotic.
This is 15 Inside the Daniel Marsh Murders. Follow and listen to 15 Inside the Daniel Marsh Murders on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back to The Lake Show, News Talk 830 WCCO. The headline in the Minnesota Star Tribune read, Golden Valley Police Chief resigns following findings of alleged misconduct, but he says that that's not the case and is going on record with his side of the events. Former Golden Valley Police Chief Virgil Green joins us in studio right now. Thank you so much, sir, for being here on the show.
Yeah, appreciate it, and thank you for the invite.
Absolutely. All right, so let's start with, how many years have you been in law enforcement?
As a police chief, yes. Over 25 years.
Okay, 25. Oh, that's as a police chief, 25
years. 25
years. Total in law enforcement, though.
Well, total in law enforcement, probably about a little over 30 years.
Wow, that's a long time.
Yeah, so I'm not an old guy, man. I'm pretty young.
He says I'm pretty. I'm not insinuating that you're old. I'm just saying that you got a lot of experience.
Yeah, I got a lot of experience, but that experience comes with some gray hair.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. I don't know that because, as you can see right here, I got no hair, so yeah. I got no hair for you. I got this baseball cap on right now.
Yeah.
So you came to Minnesota in what year?
2022 from Oklahoma City.
Oklahoma City. And see, Josh Wheeler, he's all in his feelings right now because he's an Oklahoma kid too. He saw you with the Thunder shirt on and he just got giddy all of a sudden.
He's an Okie, man. Are you a Sooner fan?
Oh, 100%. Yes, I am. You talking his language right now.
Yeah.
Well, there's a big game coming on this Saturday. OU Texas, the Red River rivalry. Yeah. So I'm pretty sure
we'll see how that shakes out.
Yeah.
All right. So let's get to the subject at hand. You're the former Golden Valley Police Chief. You just recently resigned. There's a lot going on with regards to the story. I mean, clearly there's accusations, but you're here to kind of give your perspective and your side of everything. And let's start with this. The investigator claimed that seven sergeants on April the 23rd of 2025, that there was a meeting, a reporter hearing you as the police chief saying that you were squashing the internal affairs investigation. Did you tell people that you were quashing an internal affairs investigation?
No, never did. And what I did say in that meeting was that there's an internal affairs investigation. I didn't even mention the nature of the investigation, who the investigation was about. And I just said, we're going to keep it internally, administratively, until we find out a little bit more. And then at that time, we'll get HR involved in it. Never said that I'm not including HR. Never told people not to talk to anybody, as the report states. And so that's what was said. And, they were saying that I was upset. I'm the most relaxed guy there is, so I wasn't upset. So no, I did not say that. And so it was real hard for me to accept that somebody is saying that I said something. And this investigator even told the attorney that was representing me that, I believe these seven guys, I don't believe the chief. And so, I was told not to speak to anybody, and they were told not to speak to me, but I reached out to somebody several weeks later and I said, hey, do you recall this meeting? And he did. And he said, well, this is what you said in the meeting. And I said, did you ever hear me say I was stopping the investigation? He says, no, Chief, you never said you were stopping anything. So now all of a sudden, here is a sergeant who was in the meeting who said that I didn't say something or I didn't say that. But then he turns around and says, well, I have not even been interviewed by this person who is conducting the investigation.
Mm-hmm.
So now there are some questions that, okay, you're telling me that seven sergeants said something. But here's one who's saying he hadn't even been interviewed. So there's some serious concerns with that. How fair and unbiased was this investigation, especially when you've got a person in the room saying that this is not what the chief said, and on top of that, you have not even spoken to this person until after my attorneys raised these issues. Now you go back and you talk to these people.
All right, so now let me ask this. As the chief of police, did the city manager ever provide you with a written complaint from any member of the police department regarding these allegations that you, and it was brought up in the Star Tribune article, that you intimidated people and that you were trying to stop this investigation?
No, I've never been provided a complaint. What happened was on May the 29th, I was called in to the city manager's office with the HR director and told that I was being placed on paid administrative leave because there was a second complaint. And the second complaint was that I interfered in an IA investigation. I was never given anything that showed, hey, this is who wrote the complaint out. This is what this complaint says. It's just that there's a complaint and you're being put on paid administrative leave.
Okay. Do you believe that this investigation has had a flawed process?
No, it definitely has not been a fair process.
No. Has it been a flawed process?
Definitely flawed. Mm-hmm. Definitely. I mean, especially when you got people saying that you said something and you didn't say something. And again, there's always two sides to the story.
For sure.
And there's a lot of people going to say, well, this report is saying that you did all these things, that you were intimidated, you, you were intimidating people or you were undermining, you were doing like some kind of backdoor deal. All this, this IE investigation was over an officer that some sergeants were alleging cheated on an exam. I mean, this wasn't like it was some kind of a shooting or some other kind of real serious misconduct. I mean, any allegation of somebody cheating is serious, but this is what this was about. And so for me as the police chief to get caught up into a lot of allegations of undermining and intimidating people, that's just not fair, because there was no evidence was ever presented that somebody said he came to me and told me if I speak to somebody, I'm going to face some kind of, you know, retribution. That never happened.
Yeah. Yeah. So let me ask you, and we're talking to former Golden Valley Police Chief Virgil Green here in studio on the Lake Show News Talk 830 WCCO. Another thing that had came up in the Star Tribune article, and it may have came up in one of the reports from one of the news stations, was about some body camera footage that was released to the media. Yeah. You released some body camera footage to the media about a fight at a Robbinsdale school. They are saying that you violated the data practice law by showing school officials the video and releasing the video to the media. Help us work through that. Kind of speak on what happened with that specific situation.
Yeah, so there was a fight that took place back in November of 2024 between two students at the school, two females. Officers responded to that call. The caller said that there was brass knuckles that was involved in the fight. And so when the officers got there, their main thing, two, was trying to locate the students, and three, the weapon, because in Minnesota, to have brass knuckles in a school is a felony.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were trying to do all that, but they were clearly not getting the type of response from the school officials that they should have received. You know, hey, if there's brass knuckles, officer, here's the brass knuckles. Here's the students involved. We needed to make sure that one of the female students, or both of them, were not injured. We had medical personnel there to treat them if they were. But there was really no cooperation on the school officials' part. So the officers investigated. It got sent to our detective division. They investigated it. They sent the complaint to our city prosecutor, who determined that the charges against this vice principal rose to the level of a felony more than a misdemeanor.
Mm.
Now, the student, she was charged with a felony. And so those charges were presented to the Hennepin County Attorney's Office. They ended up not charging it, so it went back to the Golden Valley City Prosecutor, and that city prosecutor ended up filing misdemeanor charges against that school official. Now, in Minnesota, it says, so what happened was the media started calling and saying, hey, there's a lot of parents that are upset. Nobody is saying anything about who's being held accountable. So they felt like this investigation was being swept under the table.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've always been a police chief that's been about transparency. There's a lot of people in the public who do not trust the police. And so my main point was, because the statute said that if there was rumors and things that would dispel those rumors, you could release that video, and that's in the state statute. And so I just followed what the state statute gave any police chief the authority to do, was to release that body cam, a portion of that body cam video footage, to show the public what those officers encountered when they got to the school and how there was not any full cooperation. Now, what happened after that was several weeks later, we end up getting a search warrant to go back to the school to look for those brass knuckles, and the principal turned over those brass knuckles. Now, if you're in a leadership position, your job, if you're there to protect the safety of the students, you're going to do whatever you can. But this official was more worried about how many officers were at the school versus the safety of the students. Now, the student that and she was violently attacked with these brass knuckles. Her mom ended up taking her to an urgent care or a hospital. The next day, she had to have stitches to her head. She had a concussion. So there were some pretty serious injuries that she received. So I just did what the law gave me the authority to do, and some people didn't like that.
I hear you. We're talking to former Golden Valley Police Chief Virgil Green here on the Lake Show News Talk 830 WCCO. This is a pretty direct question for you, though.
Okay.
Do you think that there is racism that exists within Golden Valley City Hall?
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm gonna be honest with you and be transparent. Mm-hmm. You know, I came here in 2022 as the first black police chief in the history of Golden Valley. It was at a time where there was a lot of turmoil going on within the police department. A lot of officers were leaving. There was a lot of bad blood between the former city manager and other city officials between the police department. I didn't really know what I was walking into. And to give you an idea, you and the listeners an idea, when I came in my very first day, I wasn't even in the police department an hour, but I had a resident tell me at the police department, she said, you know, do you really know why you were hired? And I'm thinking, well, I thought I was hired because I was one of the most experienced, qualified persons in the that was a finalist. And she says, well, no, you were hired because the city wanted to hire a colored man.
Hmm.
And I was like, oh, wow. I mean, I've never been called a colored man, and I'm, you know, almost 60 years old. So
and that's how they presented it?
That's how this citizen said you were hired because the city wanted to hire a colored man.
Mm.
Now, you know, there was a lot of people who did not want to see me hired. They wanted to see the interim chief hired, who was a white male, who later resigned and sued the city, and the city settled with him out of court, and he sued for discrimination.
Mm.
So, you know, there is definitely some pockets of racism within City Hall. And, you know, the city has been about diversity, equity, inclusion. And since I've been there since 2022, and it's only been a little over 3 years, there's probably been a handful of blacks that have worked in City Hall who have left. So if this is a city who is trying to diversify the workforce, they're going about it the wrong way. And a lot of people have really complained about all of the DEI training that everybody is subject to.
Do you think that the black employees are treated poorly?
Well, they're not given the they're not supported.
Okay.
They're not supported. I'll say that. And again, I think, you know, with me being the first black police chief, you know, I mean, the department went down to single digit police officers at the end of 2022 going into 2023. We end up having to contract with Hennepin County to have their deputies patrol the streets of Golden Valley in the daytime. So within a little over 18 months, the department is now back almost to full strength with just being five officers shy of being 31 sworn officers. So for me to be able to do that with my command staff and the other members of the police department, that says a lot. And so, you know, not to come to me to say, hey, chief, we got some concerns about some things. Some people are saying some things. Let's sit down and talk about it. But it was just an immediate, we're going to put you on paid administrative leave. We're going to do this outside investigation.
Let me say this. I as a person that's from here, you got here in 2022. Everybody knows that the world changed with COVID and clearly everything that happened with George Floyd.
Yeah.
And I am somebody that wants us all to improve. And I'm talking about whether it's in education, whether it's in law enforcement, whatever your calling in life is. I have to be honest, and we'll use the word transparent, mm-hmm. about my feelings about the Golden Valley Police Department or law enforcement. Just from this particular, I haven't had any negative interaction or nothing like that. That's not where I'm going.
Yeah.
What I'm going with is that I've had this kind of question mark that's kind of like over my head about the department. And the reason why I say this is because one of our former hosts and one of our colleagues here, her name is Roshini Rajkumar.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, after George Floyd, she was on the air and she was interviewing a gentleman that was a former officer. And that night he was, I guess at that particular time being described as a use of force expert.
Okay.
Formerly with Golden Valley. And I think his name is Joe Dutton. And I was alarmed at their interview that night.
Mm-hmm.
Because in their interview, he said to her that he defended Derek Chauvin and how that entire situation went down. And he said he was correct in how he handled the situation and that the use of force that Derek Chauvin had did to George Floyd with the knee on the neck, he had did several times.
Oh, wow.
That was alarming to me.
Yeah.
That would come from somebody affiliated with Golden Valley in the day and time that we're living in. So
yeah.
I guess from my perspective, as a citizen, as a Minneapolis resident, as somebody who also is a black male, I was alarmed by that.
Yeah.
And I wasn't utilizing that conversation to try to demean or look down upon Golden Valley. Mm-hmm. But when people publicly make comments like that on our airwaves,
yeah,
it threw me.
Yeah. Well, it definitely should. I mean, you know, I don't think the death of George Floyd went all around the world. There were so many people, not just in the United States, but outside of the United States, saw that video and just said, how could a police officer do that?
Yep.
For 8 minutes, you kneel on the neck of a man, and we watched this man take his last breath. That put definitely a black eye on law enforcement.
And all over the world.
All yep. over the world.
Yep.
And then you saw an exodus of police officers from around the country leave the profession because of whatever reason. A lot of people went out on PTSD and all these other things. And it's definitely impacted. And the one thing that I've said since I've been here is that it bothers me when I hear people want to do things and they're doing it off of the death of George Floyd. Well, what were you doing before the death of George Floyd?
Mm.
You know, where was your money at before the death of George Floyd? Were you investing in public safety? Were you investing into the community? Don't do something after a black man has lost his life. It's too late. Now, you can still do things, but I go back to the question. If you're a foundation, if you got millions of dollars, you should have been investing in this community long before that. And so, again, that's very disturbing to hear that. But Golden Valley has had a history of not being well liked in North Minneapolis with people. I've heard stories about people saying, I don't drive through Golden Valley. I go around Golden Valley because of just the history. And the one thing that I have tried to do since I was here as a police chief was to dispel that rumors and bring in and diversify the agency. This department, even though it's not a lot of numbers, but it's the most diverse police department that has ever been in the history of the agency. We got our first black female police officer. We got our first black Somalia police officer. And when people say, well, why are you talking about the first black female and the first black male? Because it never happened before. They wouldn't have had the opportunities if I wasn't the police chief. But I made an effort to make sure that we were going to diversify the police department. So when people came through Golden Valley, and there's a lot of black people who live in Golden Valley. I don't think a lot of people realize how many black people who do live in Golden Valley, mm-hmm. who are very professional. So the community needs to reflect, the police department needs to reflect what the community is looking like now and what the community is going to look like, what the police in the future.
Yeah. Hey, Virgil, thank you for coming in. I know there's always two sides to a story. In the media, you know, I think that we should always try to present both sides. And so there's been a side that's been in the paper and on the television news. And I'm glad that you came in on WCCO and talked about it.
Well, and I appreciate this. And I want to say this. And I think, you know, Golden Valley has the first black mayor, Rosalind Horman. She's been a very strong supporter of mine. She's trying to change things. But when you're a city that doesn't have a strong mayor, and you don't really have the support of the other council members, it's real hard to do some things. And so I just have to, you know, give her a shout out that she has been, even before she became the mayor, she was a very strong supporter.
Yeah.
And so I'm just, you know, I was hoping to be here a little bit longer,
mm-hmm.
And to leave on my terms as being the first black police chief. But again, I just want to get the truth out there that these allegations are false. I didn't intimidate anybody, didn't interfere with anything. There was never a shred of evidence presented. And I didn't, by state law, I released the video in accordance with what the state law says I had the right to do.
Gotcha. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Golden Valley Police Chief Virgil Green. We'll wrap up this second hour of The Lake Show, and we'll do that next. All right, quick update on a couple things. Top of the hour, we'll talk some Gopher football with Daniel House, gophersguru.com. The Dodgers and Phillies, they're in extras, Josh Wheeler. They are in extras. Top 10,
baseball, baby.
1-1. Who are you pulling for in that series? I'm pulling for the Dodgers, baby. Let's go.
Yeah, I mean, Dodgers easily. Yeah.
Dodgers. And also, second quarter, the Giants lead the Philadelphia Eagles 13-10. What is going on with the Eagles? Crazy. All right, coming up next, we'll talk Gopher football. Daniel House, Gophers guru, next.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
In 2013, two brutal murders left the city of Davis, California, paralyzed in fear.
The victims were an elderly couple. It was up close and personal.
I'm 48 Hours correspondent Erin Moriarty. I thought I had seen it all until I encountered the mastermind behind those murders.
I think the word is psychotic.
This is 15 Inside the Daniel Marsh Murders. Follow and listen to 15 Inside the Daniel Marsh Murders on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.